Again, I don't think it is at all improbable that the Third Reich and Dr. Kurt Blom, in investigating bubonic plague, might very well have discovered that, in fact, the Black Death was, in fact, a hemorrhagic fever, the one that is discussed there. There was an interesting and anonymous comment that was made in For the Record 602, For the Record 606, by someone calling himself Frank and someone apparently knowledgeable about biological warfare. And I'm going to relate what he says here. Interest in this again, pursuant to For the Record 606. Interesting theory on Delta 32. The plague theory of HIV/AIDS has been modified since the 1990s. The bubonic plague is now most probably HFRS, which is a hemorrhagic disease that appeared in Russia since the 1890s and hit German troops in 1941 and 1942 in Finland. The Nazis were brought to paperclip at the same time as the Japanese because the Japanese saw the disease in the 1930s in Manchuria. I would add something we spoke about in AFA program number 16, is that Unit 731, the very advanced Japanese biological warfare program, had all of its files and some of its personnel brought to the U.S. and to Fort Detrick in Maryland. And those files remain classified. This individual maintains that actually the Japanese encountered this same disease in the 1930s, the same hemorrhagic fever which caused the Black Death, unquote, and which was not the bubonic plague. This individual goes on to comment, Sweden saw it in 1934, and they have the highest rate of Delta 32 at 18% with northern Germany and northern Russia. The former Soviet Union tested it as a biological weapon in the 1970s, coded as disease number 10. I would suspect that the U.S., which would have known about this since they incorporated Unit 731 and also from the Project Paperclip people, I suspect they would have tested it as well. And again, whether the Black Death was bubonic plague or the other viral hemorrhagic fever, as was long supposed to have been the case, I think it is quite probable that the CCR5 Delta 32 immunity to AIDS infection and to that infection may very well have been deliberately developed. Something, too, in relationship to, For the Record, 686 and the National Cancer Institute's Special Viral Cancer Research Program. Again, that was the Army's Fort Detrick facility, which was then ostensibly turned over to civilian authorities, but was actually run by Litton Bionetics, Litton Industries being a major defense contractor, and they bought Bionetics Research Systems Incorporated, and many of the key veterans in that program, the Special Viral Cancer Research Program, were veterans of biological warfare research. Returning again to Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobson. Quoting here from a report by George W. Merck, the head of Merck Pharmaceutical, in For the Record 16, we looked at information presented by Dr. Leonard Horowitz that, in fact, the Merck Hepatitis B vaccine program, the experimental Merck Hepatitis vaccine, may very well have been the vector for distributing AIDS and the deliberately, in his opinion and mine, created HIV. A similar focal point was in Alan Cantwell's AIDS and the Doctors of Death. And again, I interviewed Cantwell, Horowitz, Ed Haslam, and Dr. Garth Nicholson in For the Record 16. George Merck was deeply involved with biological warfare research for the U.S. and wrote a report, and from Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobson, biological weapons could be made by just about any country, quote, without vast expenditures of money or the construction of huge production facilities, unquote. A bioweapon could be hidden, quote, under the guise of legitimate medical or bacteriological research. The Merck report was written by George W. Merck, a 48-year-old chemist and owner of Merck & Company, a pharmaceutical manufacturer in New Jersey. I would note that Merck was actually part of, there were two companies, one American, one German. They were split off at the end of World War I. The German Merck Pharmaceutical Company was a major participant in the Bormann Flight Capital Program. Merck was deeply involved with biological warfare research in the U.S. We're going to come back to the Merck Pharmaceutical Program. Merck Sharp and Dohme made the experimental hepatitis B vaccine, which in the opinion of a number of people was the vector for AIDS in the U.S. We're going to come back later and talk about what happened with Merck Pharmaceutical quite recently. So again, whether the Black Death was actually bubonic plague or, as apparently had long been regarded, a viral hemorrhagic fever remains to be determined. But the CCR5, Delta 32, provides immunity to purebred Northern Europeans for that disease. Blacks, on the other hand, have a particular susceptibility to that disease. What we're going to do next is to listen to a long section of For the Record 874. Now, I can appreciate that many members of the audience may be rolling their eyes, because what we're going to be getting into here is some aspects of the new age. And we're going to take a look once again at Project Paperclip and, quote, UFOs. This, again, For the Record 874, update on fascism and the New Age. This was recorded in August of in the fall of 2015. Areas of overlap between, yes, we came from outer space, and therefore some of us are more highly evolved than others. We're going to be dealing with the Nine in a rebroadcast of For the Record 170. And that talks about how all Earth people are evolved from a bunch of tall, blonde-haired, fair-skinned, blue-eyed space aliens, except for black people, of course, which means, therefore, that they are genetically inferior. And I guess at least to that faction of the Nine-affiliated faction of the so-called New Age, black lives really don't matter, or at least they don't matter as much as white lives, because they are evolved from our tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, fair-skinned space alien progenitors. And I want to call people's attention to the degree of overlap between Project Paperclip imports and the so-called New Age. One of the major epicenters of the so-called New Age is an institution called the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Noetic is N-O-E-T-I-C. It is based right here in the General Bay Area. It's based in Petaluma to the north of San Francisco. And it overlaps a lot of different aspects of the New Age. What I find so interesting is that one of its co-founders was none other than Werner von Braun, the SS officer and V2 rocket scientist of Nazi Germany, who became one of the most important of America's space scientists, along with another man named Arthur. Well, there are many Project Paperclip scientists. Arthur Rudolph created quite a stir here in the Bay Area when he was outed, and he eventually lost his citizenship. Also, the Institute for Noetic Sciences was founded by an astronaut named Edgar Mitchell, who claims he saw a UFO during one of his trips to the moon. And perhaps he did, I think. We haven't got time to go into it here. But I have talked about so-called UFOs in the past, and there is very strong evidence that they are real. They do not come from outer space. People have seen frisbees thrown around, right? Well, a frisbee is a disc-shaped airfoil. When the motive force of one's hand is applied to it, it flies. And the notion that human beings, with all of the remarkable technological arsenal or array at their disposal, could not make a disc-shaped airfoil that would fly, just is not a logical conclusion. You've seen the Frisbee, right? It flies, doesn't it? Well, if the Whammo Corporation can make one, you can damn bloody well bet that the aerospace industries of advanced nations could make them, and the evidence suggests that they have. Of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, from their Wikipedia entry, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, or INS, is an American nonprofit parapsychological research institute. It was co-founded in 1973 by former astronaut Edgar Mitchell, along with Werner von Braun, investor Paul N. Temple, T-E-M-P-L-E, more about him later, and others interested in purported paranormal phenomena in order to encourage and conduct research on noetic theory and human potentials. The Institute conducts research on such topics such as spontaneous remission, meditation, consciousness, alternative healing practices, consciousness-based healthcare, spirituality, human potential, psychic abilities, psychokinesis, and survival of consciousness after a bodily death. And, again, I think many people who might have gravitated to the Institute of Noetic Sciences or some of their derivative disciplines, if one could call them that, are not to be faulted. Rather, I think this should serve as something of a red flag for the deadly serpent that lies beneath the seemingly benign and perhaps even superficially attractive surface. And of Werner von Braun, again, he has been portrayed as something of an apolitical technocrat. I remember seeing him as a little, when I was a little kid, on the Walt Disney TV show, explaining all about how we were going to go to space and so forth. I knew he had worked for Nazi Germany, but I was just a kid at the time. I figured, well, you know, our government wouldn't bring in somebody who was bad and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Sadly, that was not the case. Not only was Werner von Braun a war criminal, and we'll talk about that in a second. He was, in fact, an officer in the SS. From a website, Operation Paperclip Info, and there is a lot of information about this in various books, Secret Agenda by Linda Hunt, Paperclip Conspiracy by Tom Bauer and others, talk about Werner von Braun and the SS. But from the Operation Paperclip Info website, the entry, Werner von Braun, an Office of Military Government, United States document dated April 23, 1947, states that von Braun joined the SS Horseback Riding School in 1933 and then the Nazi Party on May 1, 1937 and became an officer in the SS from May of 1940 to the end of the war, skipping down. He began as an Untersturmführer, or second lieutenant, and was promoted three times by Himmler, the last time in June of 1943, to SS Sturmbannführer, Wehrmacht Major. And to give you an idea of some of the spiritual activities in which SS officer Werner von Braun, one of the co-founders of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, engaged, we're going to turn to a recent, very good book about Operation Paperclip called Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobsen, J-A-C-O-B-S-E-N, published in hardcover by Little Brown, copyright 2014. And of the spiritual practices engaged in by SS officer von Braun, this in connection with recruiting labor for the Dora concentration camp, which in turn fed the construction of the Nordhausen V-2 facility. Skipping down. This time, Werner von Braun initiated the action himself. On August 15, 1944, von Braun wrote a letter to a Mittelwerk engineer, Albin Sawatzky, A-L-B-I-N-S-A-W-A-T-Z-K-I, describing a new laboratory he wanted to set up inside the tunnels. Von Braun told Sawatzky that to expedite the process, he had taken it upon himself to procure slave laborers from the Buchenwald concentration camp. And of the sorts of spiritual activities that were engaged in at the Buchenwald concentration camp and at Dora, again from Operation Paperclip by Annie Jacobson, the prisoners worked 12-hour shifts 7 days a week, putting together V weapons. By the end of the first 2 months, there were 8,000 men living and working in this cramped underground space. There was no fresh air in the tunnels, no ventilation system, no water, and very little light. Quote, blasting went on day and night, and the dust after every blast was so thick that it was impossible to see 5 steps ahead, unquote, read one report. Laborers slept inside the tunnels on wood bunk beds. There were no washing facilities and no sanitation. Latrines were barrels cut in half. The workers suffered and died from starvation, dysentery, pleurisy, pneumonia, tuberculosis, and phlemasia from beatings. The men were walking skeletons, skin stretched over bones. Some perished from ammonia burns to the lungs. Others died by being crushed by the weight of the rocket parts they were forced to carry. The dead were replaceable. Humans and machine parts went into the tunnels. Rockets and corpses came out. Workers who were slow in the production lines were beaten to death. Insubordinates were garroted or hanged. After the war, war crimes investigators determined that approximately half of the 60,000 men eventually brought to Nordhausen were worked to death. That sure sounds spiritual, doesn't it? Another of the co-founders, one of the major financiers as well of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, is worth noting. It's a guy named Paul Nathaniel Temple Jr. And from his Wikipedia site, or entry, I should say, Paul graduated from Princeton University in 1944 and Harvard Law School in 1948. From 1954 to 1961, he was an international petroleum concessions negotiator for Exxon. He and astronaut Edgar Mitchell co-founded the Institute of Noetic Sciences in 1973. He has been a member of the Institute of Noetic Sciences Board of Directors since 1973 and was the chairman from 1983 to 1999. He created the Temple Awards for Creative Altruism. He helps fund the Fellowship Foundation, a secretive U.S.-based religious and political organization founded in 1935 by Methodist minister Abraham Varide, V-E-R-I-D-E. Paul N. Temple was an insider core member, unquote, of the Fellowship Foundation and or Institute for Christian Leadership since the 1940s. Well, we focused on the Fellowship Foundation of Abraham Varide in For the Record program number 697. That is linked in the description for the Record 874 that will be published shortly after the program has aired. And it should be noted that the Fellowship Foundation, nominally Christian, actually presents what might be termed, using the term that Peter Lavenda used, weaponized Christianity, rather than preaching what Jesus is said to have preached. This basically makes wealthy people out to a notion of the Calvinist elect, that wealthy people are wealthy because they are the chosen of God, and that's why they are doing so well. It's essentially a form of corporatist Christianity, and not surprisingly, the Fellowship Foundation, or the family as it is also known, was deeply involved with the Third Reich and helped to sanitize and politically rehabilitate Third Reich alumni for their activities in the Cold War and in the Underground Reich and the Federal Republic of Germany. An excellent book called The Family by Jeff Charlotte, S-H-A-R-L-E-T, goes into that at considerable length. And again, For the Record, 697 goes into that. Now, the notion, or the fact, I should say, that an extremely reactionary Christian organization, I would describe it as fascist, would be financed in considerable measure by one of the same people who was also financing the Institute for Noetic Sciences, is something that we should very carefully consider, because again, we're looking at what we would think of as very different forms of religious orientation. And yet, actually, if you begin digging, I think you'll find that there is an awful lot of fascism buried into much of this. And before going to For the Record, a rebroadcast of For the Record 170, another NASA slash Nazi slash UFOs carrying our brothers in space who founded our civilization is a fellow named Joseph F. Blumrich, B-L-U-M-R-I-C-H. He had worked for the Nazi aerospace industry, specifically working for the Messerschmitt firm, making, among other aircraft, the ME-110 fighter. Eventually, he emigrated to the U.S. and became one of the top officials with the Marshall Space Flight Center. And we're going to, in a linked article, his curriculum vitae, including his work as a very important NASA official, is included. Again, that is in a linked article about Joseph Blumrich. It basically whitewashes his involvement with the Nazis, saying he could not have had a Nazi orientation or he would not have been allowed to work for NASA. Yeah, you mean like Wernher von Braun, right? What Joseph F. Blumrich is contending, however, is that the account of Ezekiel in the Bible, the Old Testament, was actually the account of Ezekiel's meeting with space aliens, not God, but space aliens who came to Earth, etc., etc., etc. Again, the notion of the extraterrestrial origin of human beings is a major element of New Age philosophy, and has at its core the polygenesis principle, which is fundamentally linked to scientific racism. From the Wikipedia entry, The Spaceships of Ezekiel. The Spaceships of Ezekiel, 1974, is a book by Joseph F. Blumrich, written while he was chief of NASA's Systems Layout Branch of the Program Development Office at the Marshall Space Flight Center. In it, he asserts that Ezekiel's account in the Bible was not the description of a meeting with God in a prophetic vision, but a description of several encounters with ancient astronauts in a shuttlecraft from another planet. Ezekiel was an Old Testament prophet who wrote about several visions he had in which he said God showed him the future and gave him various messages to deliver. Ezekiel describes seeing God riding in a chariot-like vehicle attended by angels. I would also point out that Blumrich also believes that the Hopi Indians also were visited by beings from another planet. The point being that yet another important NASA official with a Nazi aerospace industry background is promoting our brothers from space and the UFO, extraterrestrial origin or partial extraterrestrial origin of the human race. What we're going to do now for the balance of the program is to go back in time to For the Record 170 from 1999. And here is For the Record 170.
Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next half hour segment, we're going to take a look at an article about something that is of great concern to me and something that might seem ludicrous to some members of the audience, namely the perversion of religion and philosophy for the purposes of recruiting people to the fascist cause. Now, again, this may seem strange or irrelevant. I would note in this regard that there is a very strong occult element involved with Nazism, something I've spoken about in among other programs. The Ultimate Evil, Satanism, Mind Control, and the U.S. National Security Establishment, a four-part series available from Spitfire. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who has uncovered what appears to be, well, certainly a link between elements of the New Age and fascism and possibly to mind control experimentation either by the Central Intelligence Agency or perhaps, say, a subgroup within that. This, again, research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from a rather uneven publication called Fortean Times, F-O-R-T-E-A-N Times, and this is from Fortean Times, issue number 126. This is not a publication that I know a great deal about. They appear to have some factual information and some hoo-ha, so it appears to be a fairly uneven publication. I'm neither endorsing nor condemning the publication by accessing this particular article. It appears to be uneven. It's also a publication I don't know a great deal about. It seems to specialize in the weird, etc. This is certainly weird. However, I think it also is more than a little sinister. This is entitled Plan 9 from Outer Space, and research credit on this goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from Fortean Times, issue number 126, from October of 1999. And this concerns a channeling cult called the Nine, and it reads as follows. One New Age channeling cult, above all the rest, has had a huge, very disturbing influence on hundreds of thousands of devotees worldwide. Known as the Nine, its disciples include cutting-edge scientists, multimillionaire industrialists, and leading politicians. This exclusive extract, based on the Stargate conspiracy by Lynn Picknett and Cleve Prince, looks at the sinister origins of the Nine. By the way, I would note that the number nine not only has occult significance, it was held as particularly significant in the Odinist religion, to which many Nazis and white supremacists subscribe. Quote, and it begins with a quote from one of these, quote, channelers. I would note that channeling is something that I don't believe in. I don't think it's a real phenomenon, but so please note that in passing here. Quote, I am the beginning. I am the end. I am the emissary. But the original time I was on the planet Earth was 34,000 of your years ago. I am the balance. And when I say I mean because I am an emissary for the Nine. It is not I, but it is the group. We are nine principles of the universe, yet together we are one, unquote. And the authors go on to say, the declaration above is typical of the channeled pronouncements of the Council of Nine, or just the Nine. They contain all the usual New Age ingredients of grandiose statements, shaky grammar, and unprovable predictions. But unlike all the other channeling cults, that of the Nine has serious clout. Perhaps the reason for this is that they claim to be the Aeneid, the nine major gods of ancient Egypt. Or could there be another reason, one that owes more to the X-Files than the pyramid texts? Although the Nine may appear to be quintessentially a modern phenomenon, our research uncovered its truly astonishing pedigree. In fact, the story begins nearly 50 years ago in a private research laboratory in Glen Cove, Maine, called the Round Table Foundation, run by a medical doctor named Andrea Puharich, P-U-H-A-R-I-C-H, also known as Henry K. Puharich. Set up in 1948 to research the paranormal, among the noted psychics studied at the foundation, were the famous Irish medium Eileen Garrett and the Dutch clairvoyant Peter Herkos, or Peter van der Herk. Prominent members included the influential philosopher and inventor Arthur M. Young, and the socialite Alice Bouverie, née Astor. In December 1952, Puharich brought into his laboratory an Indian mystic named Dr. D.G. Vinod, V-I-N-O-D, who began to channel the Nine, or the Nine Principles. In the months before Vinod returned to India, a group met regularly to hear the Nine's channeled wisdom. Never known for their modesty, the Nine proclaimed themselves to be God, stating, quote, God is nobody else than we together, the Nine Principles of God, unquote. 3 years later, there appeared to be independent confirmation of their existence. In Mexico, Puharich and Young met Charles and Lillian Lougheed, that's spelled L-A-U-G-H-E-A-D, former Christian missionaries who were by then prominent in the burgeoning UFO contactee movement. For a description of their involvement in the Dorothy Martin Circle, see Jerome Clark's When Prophecy Failed in Fortean Times 117. Back in the States a few weeks later, Puharich received a letter from the Lougheeds containing messages received by their group's channeler. This message also claimed to come from the Nine Principles, even amazingly including references to the earlier communications transmitted through Dr. Vinod. Could the nine possibly be for real? Perhaps the answer is embedded in the career of Puharich himself. After disbanding the Roundtable Foundation in 1958, he worked for 10 years as an inventor of medical devices and achieved international recognition as a parapsychologist, most famously studying the Brazilian psychic surgeon Arrigo Jose Pedro de Freitas. But all that was to pale into insignificance because in 1971, Puharich discovered Uri Geller. At their first meetings in Tel Aviv in 1971, Puharich hypnotized Geller in an attempt to find out where his abilities came from. As a result, the young Israeli started to channel Spectra, an entity which claimed to be a conscious supercomputer aboard a spaceship. However, Puharich suggested to him that there might be a connection with the nine principles, and Spectra readily agreed that there was. The nine claimed that they had programmed Geller with his powers as a young child. Through Geller, the nine alerted Puharich to his life's mission, which was to use Geller's talents to alert the world to an imminent mass landing of spaceships that would bring representatives of the nine. However, Geller, by now an international psychic superstar, bowed out in 1973 and has resolutely turned his back on the nine ever since. Puharich had to find other channels. He joined up with aristocratic former racing driver Sir John Whitmore and Florida-based psychic and healer Phyllis Schlemmer, that's S-C-H-L-E-M-M-E-R. They found a new channeler, a Daytona cook known to history only by the pseudonym Bobby Horn, H-O-R-N-E, who lived to regret his dealings with the Nine. Driven to the brink of suicide by their constant demands, he too dropped out of the scene, his despair being dismissed by Whitmore as, quote, signs of instability, unquote. After this, Phyllis Schlemmer was appointed the authorized spokesperson for the entity known simply as Tom, who represented the Nine. Puharich, Whitmore, and Schlemmer then set up Lab 9 at Puharich's estate in Ossining, New York. The Nine's disciples included multimillionaire businessmen, many hiding behind pseudonyms, and including members of Canada's richest family, the Bronfmans. European nobility, scientists from the Stanford Research Institute, and at least one prominent political figure who was a personal friend of President Gerald Ford. We also know that Lyle Watson, then the darling of the alternative scene because of his seminal 1973 book Supernature, was involved, as was the influential counterculture guru Ira Einhorn and Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek. Roddenberry was part of that circle in 1974 and 5, and even produced the screenplay for a movie about the Nine. How much he was influenced by them is unknown, although it is said that some of their concepts found their way into the early Star Trek movies and The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, What a Giveaway series. That, by the way, that is the that parenthetical element is in the article. There was a character named Vinod, spelled the same way, by the way, in one Deep Space Nine episode. Another key player in Lab 9 was Dr. James J. Hurtak, H-U-R-T-A-K, who was appointed Buharich's second-in-command by the Nine. In fact, Hurtak had been independently channeling the Nine since 1973. Puharich and Whitmore commissioned British writer Stuart Holroyd, H-O-L-R-O-Y-D, to write an account of their adventures, which appeared in 1977 as Prelude to the Landing on Planet Earth, retitled Briefings for the Landing on Planet Earth in paperback. In this extraordinary book, the true identity of the Nine and of Tom was finally revealed. Far from being the chummy character that his rather avuncular name suggests, Tom is actually Atum, A-T-U-M, the creator god of the ancient Egyptian religion of Heliopolis, and Uncle Tom with his eight mates are none other than the great Aeneid of Heliopolis. By the way, I would add, this is in their own estimation. I don't believe any of this stuff, and I'm being polite. But I mean, I believe in the existence of these people, but I don't think they're channeling anybody from outer space. Continuing. But even with such impressive contacts, all was not well with Puharich. Lab 9 broke up in 1978 after a series of mysterious events that culminated in an arson attack on the Ossining estate, and he fled to Mexico, claiming that he was being persecuted by the CIA. He returned to the USA 2 years later and appears to have played no further part in the Nine story. He died in 1995 after falling down the stairs in his South Carolina home. Again, note the accidental death of Andriy Buharich. Whether it was exactly that type of a death or whether there was more to it, I don't know. But I would encourage people to hold open the possibility that there may have been more than an accidental death. When people have been involved with fascism and or the intelligence community, does not do much for one's longevity, and one needs to examine the untimely deaths of people involved with those milieu with a very critical eye. Continuing, after discussing the death of Buharich, the authors write, however, the nine continued. Not only did Schlemmer and Whitmore continue their mission, but Dr. Hertog has also moved on. He has become a major player in the unfolding millennial drama currently being played out at Giza, but perhaps more importantly, he has established himself as a New Age guru par excellence, traveling the world giving workshops on his book of channeled revelations from the Nine, The Keys of Enoch. Written and laid out in classic biblical style, its darkly apocalyptic vision has huge numbers of influential devotees. This, we find very worrying. Another nine channel, an Englishwoman named Jenny O'Connor, was introduced to the avant-garde Esalen Institute in San Francisco by Sir John Whitmore. I would add Esalen is actually a Big Sur in Northern California. It's not in San Francisco, so a slight factual correction there. Continuing, she and the nine became so influential there that they held seminars and, unbelievably, were actually listed on the Institute's staff, even successfully ordering the sacking of its chief finance officer and the reorganization of its entire management structure. This should concern us because many influential people attended the Nine's Esalen seminars, including Russians who were part of the Institute's Soviet exchange program. Some of these later rose to prominence in the Gorbachev regime and were instrumental in the downfall of communism. I would add in Radio Free America program 36, the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, I analyzed the U.S. intelligence and German intelligence destabilization of the Soviet Union. The possibility that the quote nine unquote may have been involved with such a destabilization effort is one that should not be too readily dismissed. Resuming again with the narrative, speaking of Russians who were involved with the nine seminars, some of these later rose to prominence in the Gorbachev regime and were instrumental in the downfall of communism. The Esalen Institute now runs the U.S. branch of the Gorbachev Foundation. The Nine are very much still with us. One of their recent channels, who is also in contact with Tom, is the American writer David M. Myers, M-Y-E-R-S. He is the co-author with Britain's David S. Percy of that extraordinary tome, Two-Thirds, A History of the Galaxy and the Human Race, according to Myers' Otherworldly Contacts, who clearly have no sense of the absurd. Percy, best known as a champion of the face on Mars and the hoaxing of the Apollo moon landings, was at one time part of the Schlemmer Circle. Among the other major proponents of the monuments of Mars and their alleged connection with ancient Egypt is none other than Dr. James Hertog. The Nine's great prophet, who has promised this idea since as long ago as 1973, actually, let me reread this last sentence. It's incorrectly punctuated. Among the other major proponents of the monuments of Mars and their alleged connection with ancient Egypt is none other than Dr. James Hertog, the Nine's great prophet, who has promoted this idea since as long ago as 1973. Richard C. Hoagland, H-O-A-G-L-A-N-D, familiar to 40 and Times readers as another unrepentant Mars face enthusiast, is also clearly under the Nine's spell. David Myers and David Percy were respectively American and European Director of Operations for Hoagland's Mars mission. In fact, his interpretation of the monuments of Mars comes directly from the Nine. Flake though he may appear, increasingly in these hallowed pages, but his influence over huge swaths of the hungrier mystery seekers is undeniable. This is the man who addresses rapt audiences at the United Nations. But it is in the New Age channeling circuit that the Nine have truly come into their own. In any other circles, their true agenda would no doubt have been rumbled long ago, but this is the New Age. Anything the Nine say must be sweetness and light, right? But an objective reading of their divine pronouncements reveal the first stirrings of something very nasty in paradise. Their words appeared in 1992 as the book The Only Planet of Choice, credited to transceiver Schlemmer, and edited by Mary Bennett, a one-time member of the Schlemmer Circle, who also edited Myers and Percy's Two-Thirds. This has had an unprecedented influence over the New Age. According to Paulden Jenkins, P-A-L-D-E-N Jenkins, editor of an earlier edition of Only Planet, more and more New Age channeling groups are realizing that the real source of their wisdom is the Nine. In fact, we have discerned what amounts to a campaign. In fact, we have discerned what appears to amount to a campaign by the Nine or their adherents to take over the New Age. It would be a mistake to underestimate the economic or even political potential of this vast subculture. Rich pickings, indeed. But the Nine's influence does not extend merely to New Age channeling circles. Andrea Buharich, James Hertok, and Richard Hoagland have all lectured at the United Nations in New York. And individuals connected with the Nine are also known to have influence with Vice President Al Gore. Of course, if the Nine really are the ancient gods of Egypt, then surely there could be fewer more significant events than their return. One may be justified in thinking that the more leading politicians who fall under their influence, the better. But are they really the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? I would add, the mere fact of adding this, asking that question, I take it as given that what the Nine is saying is at least superficially complete drivel. However, I suspect that they have a hidden agenda. And just what that hidden agenda is, I think, will become pretty clear very shortly. So I take this, could it be the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? I take it as axiomatic that they're not. But that, I guess, it reflects the difference in perspective between 40 and Times and Dave Emery. Continuing, one may be justified in thinking that the more leading politicians who fall under their influence, the better. But are they really the ancient Aeneid of Egypt? Can it be that they have actually returned to sort us all out, scattering love and enlightenment from their high moral ground? Tom, in The Only Planet of Choice, chooses his words carefully as he explains that all the races of the Earth were seeded from space gods except one, the indigenous race, unquote, the blacks. He is very careful to urge us not to make an issue out of this. After all, it's not the black race's fault that they have no divine spark like the rest of us. Perhaps the most disturbing aspect of the history of the Nine is its relationship to the career of Andrea Buharich. Recent research has revealed Buharich to have a distinctly sinister side. As an army doctor in the 1950s, he was deeply involved with the CIA's notorious MKUltra mind control project. He, together with the infamous Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, experimented with a variety of techniques to change or induce actual thought processes, even to creating the impression of voices in the head. These techniques included the use of drugs, hypnosis, and beaming radio signals directly into the subject's brain. And significantly, he was engaged in this work at exactly the same time that the Nine made their first appearance at the Round Table Foundation. The foundation itself is now known to have been largely funded by the Pentagon as a front for its medical and parapsychological research. Buharich was still working for the CIA in the early 1970s when he brought Uri Geller out of Israel. Buharich's use of hypnosis is particularly interesting in the non-circle. In the case of Uri Geller and Bobby Horn, he first hypnotized them and then suggested that they were in touch with the Nine, and lo, they were. Ira Einhorn, a close associate of Buharich during the 1970s, confirmed to us that he believed that Buharich was humanly directing, unquote, the Nine communications. The evidence we have gathered strongly suggests that Tom and his fellow gods originated not in the stars, but behind closed doors as part of a CIA mind-control experiment. And what happened to that experiment? Now, with hundreds of thousands of devotees, some in very high places, can the Nine be deemed a success? Of course, that depends very much on what the CIA had in mind. With their subtle racist propaganda, perhaps the flaky New Age Nine should worry the hell out of us. I agree with that last statement, not only because of this particular manifestation of irrationalism, because in general, it appears to me that this society is retreating into not only irrationalism, but those aspects of fundamentalist religion which appeal to irrationalism, and there is no shortage of those. And I think that not only fundamentalist Christians and others, but people involved with the New Age need to be particularly alert for fascist propaganda masquerading as New Age philosophy, and that would certainly appear to be the case with the Nine. I would note in this regard that Nazi mystic Julius Evola has become very influential in New Age circles, and also a guy named Albert Pike. That fellow Albert Pike had been a Confederate general and was in charge of military intelligence for the Confederate armies during the American Civil War. He also was the disciple of an occultist named Eliphas Levi, and he also, along with Nathan Bedford Forrest, another Confederate general and disciple of Eliphas Levi, they founded the Ku Klux Klan. I was talking to someone about Albert Pike, and they said to me, well, are you sure it's the same Albert Pike? Albert Pike is very well respected in the metaphysical community. Well, be that as it may, he's also the co-founder of the Ku Klux Klan, and the use of New Age philosophy, like the use of a fundamentalist Christianity and a fundamentalist religion of other denominations, is something that can be used to woo people to the Nazi cause, and I think people involved with the New Age need to be particularly alert to those possibilities. Someone who has become very influential in New Age circles, or at least some of them, is a woman who went by the name of Savitri Devi, last name D-E-V-I. There's a book about Savitri Devi, who was an occultist and someone who subscribed to the Hindu-Aryan myth. She also became a major theoretician of post-World War II Nazism. There's a book about Savitri Devi by Nicholas Goodrick Clark, last name Goodrick-Clarke. That book is entitled Hitler's Priestess, subtitled Savitri Devi, the Hindu-Aryan Myth, and Neo-Nazism. The book was published in hardcover by New York University Press, copyright 1998. The ISBN number is 0-8147-3110-4. And there's a discussion of Savitri Devi, who was a mystic and who helped to forge links between Nazi philosophy and elements of the New Age. And we're going to discuss Savitri Devi in future broadcasts as well. Just a couple of passages from this particular book. Again, Hitler's Priestess by Nicholas Goodrick Clark. After discussing a presentation in Samizdat Publications of Savitri Devi's work, Samizdat is a Nazi publisher run by a fellow named Ernst Zundel, last name Z-U-U-M-L-O-T-N-D-E-L, who operates out of Toronto. After discussing an issue of Samizdat publishers of trafficking about of the philosophy and works of Savitri Devi, the author Nicholas Goodrick Clark goes on to comment, Samizdat's presentation of Savitri Devi was evidently part of this strategy designed to entice new audiences with the neo-Nazi message. Ancient mythology and pyramid secrets, Eastern religion, vegetarianism, and green ideas, the very currency of the burgeoning New Age with its interest in exotic religion, spiritual truths, and a worship of nature, could be exploited as bait for the young, unwary, or simply curious. By the late 1970s, the historical experience of the Third Reich was quickly receding into the past. As popular literature and films ably demonstrated, Nazism was becoming something mythical, even fantastic, and also plastic that could be molded and combined with novel associations and thereby given new meanings. By republishing the works of Savitri Devi, Zundel aimed to create a new cultic interest in Hitler, linking him to ancient mysteries, the world of nature, and powerful religious symbols drawn from the Orient. Her ideas have since built unlikely bridges between neo-Nazism and the New Age. Savitri Devi viewed nature in the Hindu fashion as a violent pageant of creation and destruction in which man held no special rights. A cloyingly sentimental love of animals stood in marked contrast to her misanthropic contempt for non-human Aryans, the weak and infirm. Himmler and Rosenberg, among other leading Nazis, also combined a concern for animals with their monstrous blueprints to eliminate all, quote, unworthy, unquote, human life. The Impeachment of Man, her book devoted to a thoroughgoing rejection of the man-centered creeds of Judaism and Christianity, was republished by the far-right Noontide Press in America in 1991. I would add that's a publishing arm of the Liberty Lobby. Continuing. Here, the brutality of social Darwinism meets both the green cult of nature and the antisocial excesses of, quote, animal rights, unquote, activists. Again, the amoral worship of beauty and force implicit in Nazi thinking finds new alliances with Hinduism, the cult of Shiva, and deep ecology, that radical current of ecological thought that condemns modern man as the scourge of nature. And then talking about her background, she was of Greek-English birth and did not live in Germany during World War II, and she actually spent her time in India, and spent the war years in India and actually married a Brahmin. And after discussing that, the author goes on to comment, "During these years, Savitri Devi elaborated an extraordinary synthesis of Hindu religion and Nordic racial ideology involving the polar origin of the Aryans, the cycle of the ages, and the incarnation of the last avatar of Vishnu in Adolf Hitler. She regarded the Third Reich as, quote, the holy land of the West, the stronghold of regenerate Aryandom, unquote. Her ideas were actually representative of a certain section of high-caste Brahmin Indian society that hated the Raj and was impressed by Hitler's dramatic challenge of British imperial power. Such Indians were fascinated by the Nazi swastika, a holy Indian symbol, and fondly recalled the German tradition of Sanskrit scholarship since the early 19th century. However, it seemed unlikely that these ideas, so foreign to the actuality of National Socialism, could ever find supporters in the West. The situation changed with the total defeat and collapse of the Third Reich in 1945. In its wake, Savitri Devi pursued a long and busy career as a neo-Nazi apologist and ideologue in Europe. She was arrested by the British occupation forces in Germany for Nazi propaganda activities and imprisoned. Her extravagant Hitler cult, her Hindu Nordicist doctrine of the Aryan race, and unswerving loyalty to the Nazi cause found numerous devotees among her fellow prisoners and demoralized Germans. After her release, she befriended leading personalities of the Nazi regime, such as the air ace Hans Ulrich Rudel and the commando leader Otto Skorzeny, who both played an active role in maintaining a global Nazi support network. She met with Nazi emigres and fugitives in Spain, Egypt, and the Middle East. She wrote books hymning the Third Reich and National Socialism, accounts of her propaganda campaign and detention, and a highly charged emotional memoir of her pilgrimage, unquote, to Hitler shrines and other places of Nazi association in Austria and Germany during the 1950s. Skipping down, nor was her appeal confined to diehard German Nazis and survivors of the Third Reich. The existence of small but persistent neo-fascist and neo-Nazi movements after 1945 in Europe, the United States, and South America is a well-documented fact. And I would note that Savitri Devi, as noted here, had a great deal of appeal to those elements, and do note in connection with the Nine and their notion that we're all evolved from space people except for black people, that that's essentially a Nazi idea, a racist idea, and people should be extremely alert to fascist ideas manifesting themselves through various types of New Age philosophy, because that's an ever-present danger. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.
That again, for the record, program number 8, program number 170 from 1999. That again was, for the record, 874 from late 2015. But it was actually from November of 2015. Anyway, you can check that out. Now, note the Nine, and it is really quite remarkable how many different aspects of the so-called New Age track back to the Nine in one way or another. I would note that people from William Dudley Pelley's Silver Shirts domestic fascist organization also had encounters with, quote, Venusians, unquote, as we talked about in AFA program number 16, and also, or actually in lecture number 1 about UFOs. And those Venusians had blonde hair, blue eyes, and fair skin, just like the Nine. Another mind control cult that has evolved into a fairly powerful entity in the U.S., is the Hare Krishna cult. And what I'm going to note are the really unusual views, bearing in mind some of Savitri Devi and how much of the so-called New Age does track back to the Nine. More about the Nine in just a minute. Something we spoke about in, for the record, 941 and in 942. We were talking about Tulsi Gabbard, who was Bernie Sanders' prospective vice presidential candidate, and one of the people who placed his name into nomination in the 2016 election. Gabbard is a member of one of the branches of the Hare Krishna cult, and Swami Prabhupada, P-R-A-B-H-U-P-A-D-A, was the founder of the Hare Krishna movement and a very interesting individual. From the International Business Times of September 27th of 2013, an article by P-A-L-A-S-H, Ghosh, G-H-O-S-H, Swami Prabhupada, founder of Hare Krishna movement and a virulent racist and anti-Semite. Skipping down. But the man who spearheaded the Hare Krishna empire, Prabhupada, espoused some very controversial views that would likely upset and even outrage those who are otherwise sympathetic to spiritual endeavors and theology. For one thing, Prabhupada spewed vitriolic racial hatred toward black or African people repeatedly and explicitly. Examples of his racial bigotry are numerous and frequently recorded in lectures and private conversations by his many devotees and disciples over the decades. Even if some of his comments were taken out of context, as his defenders and apologists sometimes assert, the sheer volume and magnitude of his immense bigotry cannot be ignored or sugarcoated. Part of Prabhupada's hatred of blacks stemmed from his deep-seated Hindu beliefs that dark-skinned peoples represent the very bottom of the hierarchy of the human race, a direct reflection of India's ancient color-based caste system. Skipping down. It is all a nonsense civilization, he declared. A first-class Rolls-Royce car, and who is sitting there? A third-class Negro, talking about the U.S. This is going on. You will find these things in Europe and America. This is going on. A first-class car and a third-class Negro. The theme of black people as cursed by God and hopelessly beyond redemption appeared repeatedly in Prabhupada's comments. During an initiation session in Bombay, now called Mumbai, he told some devotees who were preparing to go to Africa, "You have got a good opportunity. You are going to Africa to deliver these persons. These groups of men are considered very fallen, the black men. They are habituated to steal. Therefore, they have been given a separate place, the African jungles," unquote. For a man who came from a country colonized by the British, Prabhupada made some rather shocking statements about imperialism, in particular as it pertained to the U.S. In a discussion with a disciple named Somachandrava Dasa, Prabhupada seemed to equate the Native Americans, pejoratively called Red Indians of North America, with the Sudras, the lowest caste, darkest-skinned Indians of the Hindu system in India. "Sudras, black people, have no brain," he said. "In America also, the whole of America once belonged to the Red Indians. Why, they could not improve. The land was there. Why did these foreigners, the Europeans, come and improved it? So Sudras cannot do this. They cannot make any improvements." Prabhupada apparently also deeply embraced the myth of the Aryan super race and linked the ancient peoples of India to Europe and the U.S. During a talk in Australia 1 year prior to his death, Prabhupada declared that, quote, "The Aryans spread to Europe also, and the Americans, they also spread from Europe. So the intelligent class of human being, they belong to the Aryans, the Aryan family, just like Adolf Hitler claimed that he belonged to the Aryan family. The Swami also equated the Dravidians, that is, the dark-skinned original inhabitants of India who now predominate in the southern part of the country, with black Africans. He also bemoaned that the Dravidians, black people, mixed with the Aryans, white people, throughout Indian history, including in his native Bengal. In Bengal, black mixed up with the white, he complained. In Bengal and Madras, now called Chennai, a city in South India, so many Dravidian have been mixed up with the Aryan. Therefore, in Bengal and Madras, you'll find many people who are black. The Dravidians, Prabhupada declared, are non-Aryans. Just like these Africans, they are not Aryans, unquote. Prabhupada also appeared to warn that the race mixing that occurred in India was also occurring in Europe and America, and that it would create serious problems in the future. He also held some deeply pessimistic views about the racial conflict in the U.S. Speaking in Tehran, Iran in 1976, Prabhupada declared, quote, I don't think the Negro question in the U.S. is solved. The whites, they do not like the Negroes still. Wherever there are Negroes in that neighborhood, the whites do not go in. Although they, black people, have been given equal rights, at heart, the whites, they do not like it. Is there any improvement? I don't think so. Unquote. Prabhupada also appeared to endorse segregation, the separation of the races, by referring to behavior in the animal kingdom. Black crows will not like to live with the ducks and white swans, he reportedly said during a train trip in India during the final year of his life, and white swans will not like to live with the crows. That is a natural division, unquote. In a conversation with an American disciple named Ramasvara, Prabhupada suggested that without government control through welfare, black people would become out of control, unquote, and create disorder in society. Especially in your country, the U.S., it will be dangerous because these blacks, if they don't get employment, they will create havoc, these blacks, he said, and they are not civilized. They want money, and if they don't get money, they will create havoc, unquote. In a February 1977 conversation in Mayapur along the Ganges, Prabhupada pontificated on what must be done with the blacks, the Sudras of India, again, equating them with African Americans in the U.S. Most appallingly, he suggested that black people should remain in bondage. The Sudra is to be controlled only, he said. They are never to be given freedom, just like in America. The blacks were slaves. They were under control, and since you have given them equal rights, they are disturbing, most disturbing, always creating a fearful situation. Blacks are uncultured and drunkards. What training have they got? They have got equal rights. It is best to keep them under control as slaves, but give them sufficient food, sufficient clothes, not more than that. Then they will be satisfied. Prabhupada also had some choice words about the Jews. During another conversation with Ramasvara, Prabhupada alleged that Hitler killed the Jews in Germany because banks in the U.S. and Western Europe, allegedly controlled by Jews, were helping to finance Vladimir Lenin and the communist revolution in Russia and elsewhere. They, Jewish bankers, were financing against the interests of Germany, Prabhupada said. Otherwise, he, Hitler, had no enmity against the Jews. The Jews have got money. They want to invest and get some profit. Their only interest is how to get money, not nationalism, not religion, nothing of the sort. Therefore, Shakespeare wrote of Shylock, the Jew, unquote. Also speaking in New York in March of 1966, the Swami declared, Hitler was a great student of Bhagavad Gita, classic Hindu literature. A scripture, I should say. A devotee named Gopageshvara Dasa wrote that Prabhupada clearly embraced racism and eugenics. Prabhupada certainly believed that there was a master human race, the Aryans, and that they were white or tan, he wrote. Most other races, such as Africans or Native Americans, were inferior, unquote. And again, in the Nine, all of the human race is supposedly descended from the Nine. Again, the ancient gods of Egypt, and Aryans were called blonde hair, blue eyes, and fair skin. Everybody that is, except for black people. For the Record 874, which featured an excerpt, it featured all of For the Record 170, you heard about how the Third Reich had an affinity for some of the classic aspects of Hindu philosophy. Heinrich Himmler believed that the original Aryan race came out of India and that somehow the Germans were connected with him. And obviously in the philosophy of Prabhupada, the founder of the Hare Krishna sect, one sees the same institutional, racist, and bigoted character that manifested in the SS and the Third Reich in general.